such a tight grip on this material world, just trying to hold on to it, against all common sense, what to speak of intelligence, we're holding on to something that practically speaking doesn't exist. Meaning that it's always shifting, it is going to disappoint us, and yet we hold on to it. So crush, 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 so that we hold on to something of substance. And that something of substance is someone of substance, actually. Thank you. Anyone remember anything else from the lecture? Someone who hasn't? Yes? Yes, Yahamanugrami, the example. It was so interesting how Parikkhit Maharaj asked that question, Prabhupada hinted, because it was approaching the time of his leaving this world, and his focus Krishna was on Krishna. He was specifically asking Sukadeva to speak about Krishna, and yet he had a suspicion, is this practical, considering my forefathers who had taken shelter of Krishna, look what happened to them, the Pandavas. 13 years in exile, this difficulty, that difficulty. So he asked that, and the answer was that Krishna, out of his special mercy, takes away, out of his affection. Anyone remember anything else? There was a little story at the end. Sanatana Goswami, yes. What about Sanatana Goswami? Rupa Goswami wanted to feed him, yes. And Srimati Radharani came. Oh, that pierces the heart, doesn't it? Even though we laughed because it was so out of telling a nice, gentle story, a sweet story, how wonderful Srimati Radharani had appeared to the great Sri Rupa to satisfy his desire, and Sanatan's comment was, "You have murdered me." Just imagine, try to glimpse through the clouds, the clouds being the cloud of our consciousness, what the heart of such a personage like Sanatana Goswami is to have, or Prabhupada, to have said that. We would think, oh, how nice, Krishna has come and done this, how nice. And Prabhupada said, you have murdered me. I only want to give to Krishna. This is Vrindavan. And now just take our remembrances back to yesterday, reading from which chapter of the Bhagavatam? 21. The gopis are attracted by the flute. And who remembers something from that? We read two verses, the first two verses. They were very clear. And what else was there? Remember, who is the center of Vrindavan? Again, if you remember for whose pleasure everything was made, you'll probably remember some details about how Vrindavan was greeting Krishna. Madhusana. But what did we from yesterday? Something. The waters. What were in the waters? Lotus flowers. And those lotus flowers were Sugandhina. Yes. Yes, the breeze. And what kind of a breeze was it? very gentle and cooling. It wasn't a big blowing wind. Just a gentle breeze carrying the fragrance of the lotus flowers to Krishna. This is what's on the top of the mountain. Something very, very cooling and fragrant. A gentle breeze that is so sweet because it is carrying the fragrance of Krishna. And everything in Vrindavan is meant to please Krishna. Everything in the material world is meant to please... Trick question here, be careful. Yes, false ego, me, this is what I'm thinking, Ishwaraham, aham bogi, siddaham, balavan suki, it's all, I am the center, no wonder this, there is no peace or happiness in the material world, because there are 6 billion people all thinking, each and every one of them thinking, I am the center. So this is the crushing that has to be done. Another example that instead of crushing, perhaps a more gentle example in the words of Kapila Muni, the subtle body has to be dissolved through the process of bhakti, bhakti yoga, devotionally serving Krishna. It dissolves the subtle body, which means it dissolves the sense of me being the center of the universe. And this is what happens as one climbs the mountain. One must lose the sense of me being the center, and a new sense of self, of identity, has to awaken in the heart, and that is what? Mahaprabhu said it. Naham vipro na cha narapati na pi vaishno na sudro naham vani na cha griyapati no vinishtiyativa kintu pradyan nikala paramananda pona vritabder I'm a servant, dasa, dasana, dasana, das. Servant, servant, servant. No one goes to universities nowadays to learn how to become a servant. We go to get power in the material world. And that entangles us deeper and deeper in master consciousness. Master consciousness. The coverings become thicker around the soul. So therefore Prabhupada called this, he would never say civilization, he would say so-called civilization. He called it soul killing or soul covering. Soul killing. So we want to climb the mountain of Krishna consciousness and attain something that is exactly the opposite. And we spoke about the most important, not yesterday but the day before, we spoke about the most important ingredient that has to be carried, or if you don't have it to carry it, you have to develop it on the way, and that is humility. That is the prerequisite, Mahaprabhu himself says, to Kirtaniya Sadahari, to chanting Krishna's names. So what other tools or what other qualities does one need to climb this mountain? For our reference for this, we will turn to the fourth canto. It is an immediate reference that I have in my consciousness because we were speaking on the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam just fairly recently, and there were so many wonderful realizations that come out in this. With Prithu Maharaj and his dealings with Indra, who tried to steal away the horse So Prithviraj wouldn't be able to perform the 100th sacrifice because he was envious. He was fearful of his position. So he wanted to keep Prithviraj down. And Prithviraj, he gave it up ultimately on Lord Brahma's order. I won't even perform this. And he became famous, more famous, through that humility and surrender and that forgiveness than if he had performed the 100th sacrifice. And then Lord Vishnu was so pleased with him that he appeared and he gave Prithviraj, we'll go back to something that he offered Prithviraj, any benediction you want, God comes down and says, whatever you want, you could have. This is what, in one sense, every conditioned soul is dreaming of, because he's interested in getting everything he wants. But we don't have the power to get what we want. But when Krishna says, I will give you whatever you want, by his power, he can have it. We'll talk about what he asked for in a few moments. But he gave a benediction, or made a prediction, rather, the Lord. Lord Narayan. Does anyone know what he predicted? Very soon, he said. Does anyone remember? Yes, you'll see the four Kumaras. These great saintly personalities will come. And you will see them. They are completely beyond the material nature. They keep themselves as young boys, even though they are the oldest sages. Because they they don't want to be troubled by the things that adults are troubled by. They keep themselves as children. They are so transcendental, beyond the material world, and they will come down and you will have their association. You'll be able to see them. And, more importantly than seeing them, you'll be able to, and before hearing, and after serving, and before hearing, asking questions, inquiring. Yes. So we'll start now in our attempt to mine out four essential. What's the right word? It's not ingredients. It's not exactly equipment and. Competences, or what, when you're climbing the mountain, what is it called that you take with you? Equipment, something like that. We must be equipped with these qualities and abilities. It's a fact if we want to climb the mountain. So he asks the question, when the four Kumaras come and he greets them, he first asks a question. This is in the 22nd chapter of the 4th canto. He asks a very pertinent question. First he says, I am completely assured that personalities like you are the only friends for persons who are blazing in the fire of material existence. Think about those words. We read these kind of things, but think about them. Who are in the blazing, it's translated here, not usually we say the blazing fire, but it's here, it's for persons who are blazing in the fire. It's the persons who are blazing. They are burning. Material existence, samsara davanalalita loka. Davanala means forest fire. The material world is a conflagration. A forest fire, it burns. And there is no escape, practically speaking. Surrounded by fire. It is terrifying to be surrounded by fire. And it is burning. While it is terrifying. Searing and burning in the blazing fire. So you are the friends, the only friends, because you are not being burned by the forest fire of material existence. I therefore ask you how in this material world we can very soon achieve the ultimate goal of life. So on one side, the ultimate goal, not on one side, but we've been speaking of the ultimate goal in the form of a metaphor of climbing to the top of the mountain and attaining the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So we will read some parts of the reply of Sanat Kumar, who was speaking on behalf of the four Kumaras. And this is the first point. Rather, in the 21st verse of the 22nd, he's going to tell what the conclusions of the scriptures are in answer to this question. Now please listen carefully. There's going to be something on this side, and there's going to be something on this side. It has been conclusively decided in the scriptures. What is he saying when he says this? What is he saying when he says it has been conclusively decided in the scriptures? By the but what authority? We're getting to the point. This is not my own idea, he's saying. This is what the greatest of realized souls have spoken and concluded. It is conclusively decided in the scriptures. If just some ordinary foolish person with no education, no success in his life, tells you how to achieve life's fulfillment, who will listen? Therefore, in all the New Agey advertisements, there's one thing in common. When they have a picture of the presenter, he always has this great smiley face of some sort or another. Because he's showing, yes, I'm smiling, I'm happy. Therefore, I will teach you how to be happy. But ultimately, he cannot do that. He cannot teach, because ultimately he is caught in the forest fire. But the first thing that the four Kumaras say, this is the conclusion of Shastra, after due consideration, that the ultimate goal for the welfare of human society is, first, the part that no one wants to hear. It is detachment from the bodily concept of life on this side. We want this side, but we don't want to deal with this side. Detachment from the bodily concept of life. But he says both. First, this one. Detachment, and that's going to be the first of what word did we use again?
Equipment.
It was something came out better than that. We have to equip us. Yes, the first thing we have to equip ourselves with is detachment. If you want to carry all your just imagine in this metaphor, you want to take everything that gives your body comfort, but you're going to be climbing the mountain. That means you have to carry your bed, you have to carry your favorite chair, your computer, your UPS, your this, your that, your whole family, your wardrobe, 5 pairs of shoes, 30 credit cards just in case, your mobile phone just in case, and enough tons, and your car, and your spare tire, and on and on, and everything that we're attached to. So climbing a mountain? No, if you want that kind of comfort, you have to stay at the bottom. So, the ultimate goal, the first thing is detachment from the bodily concept of life. And the second, increased and steadfast. What does steadfast mean? Permanent. Holding tightly. Steadfast attachment. Increased, but not just steady, because you can be steady at having nothing. But increased and steadfast attachment for the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental beyond the modes of material nature. Now, Sanat Kumar is speaking from the point of view, because he's come from the path of Jnana, a Jnani Yogi, and he's the guru of the Jnani Yogi, so his instructions will not... he will speak in the terminology of the Jnana Bhaktas, or the Jnana Yogis. So, who is transcendental and beyond the modes of material nature, we have to develop attachment for him. But before... So that's going to be the second thing we have to equip ourselves with, is attachment for the Supreme Lord. And then the question came up yesterday from Palaki, well, how do we get that? That's the desire to climb. How do we get that? So we'll be speaking about that in a moment. But first we'll talk about this side. What's on this side? Detachment from? From specifically? What's the essence of material attachment? It's the bodily concept of life. Prabhupada once said, compared to the intoxication of thinking we are the body, every other intoxication is like salt and pepper, a minor spice only. This is the intoxication in this world, the ignorance of this world, the bodily concept of life. Now, first thing, detachment. Now, why should we become detached? Listen. Now, Sanat Kumar, in just a few verses, through 32 and then 36, he's going to explain why this is required. Because we have a tendency, naturally, to want to carry everything with us as we're going up the mountain. But it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. And either when it begins, the weight of our attachments become very, very strong, we either do one out of two things. We either start throwing them off, becoming detached from our attachments, or we go back down again. Sanat Kumar says, this is text 30. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness becomes lost. Jivera Sarupoi Krishna Nityadas. Our Sarupa, my own form, who I am, it becomes lost. My relationship with Krishna becomes lost. Through what? Letting the mind dwell on the objects of the senses. Attachment to the concept of me being the enjoyer. One's real consciousness almost becomes lost. And an example he gives to help us understand. Like water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. Because we only have so much consciousness. And naturally, as Sanat Kumar has already explained, our consciousness is naturally expanded. It's expanded. But when we're attached to the objects of sense gratification and our mind dwelling on that, our consciousness becomes small and contracted, almost lost. When we think, I want to enjoy this, I want to enjoy that, I dwell, Jayato Vishaya Pungsan Sangas Tejo Vijayate. I dwell on an object of the senses, my mind becomes full of calm, lust, and immediately it compresses. And there's no question of thinking about higher topics. Like the water in a lake is sucked up by the grasses on the side of the lake. until the lake itself becomes just mud with no water in it. One loses one's consciousness. He continues. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses his capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. One doesn't even know he's suffering, because one is just thinking of how can I get that object of enjoyment. No consciousness about who we really are, our eternality, our relationship with Krishna. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. No desire to climb the mountain, to be with Sisi, Radha, and Krishna as a servant. Forgetfulness of every other attempt I made to enjoy myself and the failure. We are old enough to be experienced, and yet, when the desires enter the heart, everything is lost. Knowledge, forgetfulness only comes. And this next sentence is very heavy. When this occurs, when one's consciousness becomes sucked up, but like the water in the lake, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. And listen to this one. Very heavy instructions. There is no stronger obstruction. What does obstruction mean? Obstacle. Yes, like obstacle. There is no stronger obstacle, obstruction to one's self-interest, swartha, one's own interest. He's going to tell what the strongest, the biggest obstacle is. And this is, in the frame of reference of one soul whose consciousness is being sucked up by material desires and trying to remove that. There's no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. In other words, when something becomes prominent in my mind and I take something as more important for my own self-interest other than developing my love for Krishna, to think anything more pleasing than one's self-realization, this is an obstacle, the strongest obstacle, anything. And therefore, part of surrender is accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable. How many times do we have to walk down the path, this thorn-filled path of material enjoyment, before we learn not to walk down the path even in our mind? Even up to the point of desiring liberation, what to speak of sense gratification, combining the senses and the objects. So therefore, so many great Vaishnavas, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, pray to the mind to release them from these attachments, which ultimately caused so much misery to everyone. And then the 36th verse. Also very pointed, strong, to the point, piercing. Piercing the cloud. What is the cloud? That yes, only if. The cloud is only if I have this, then I will be happy. And when this is anything other than the service to the lotus feet of Sisi Radha and Krishna, this includes their dear ones. These words pierce the cloud. He says, and this is the final verse we'll read on this topic, we accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. But we should know that such distinctions, good and bad in the material world, sub and asub, auspicious and inauspicious in the material world, we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. They are just distinctions of maya. Just like if we're watching a movie and the hero wins, or the hero loses. We become thrilled when he wins and sad when he loses, but actually it's only an illusion. It's just some video or some film going by. There's no gain, there's neither gain nor loss, in fact. It is just illusion, it is maya. And to identify with an illusion is insanity. So this is just the bewilderment of maya. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence. The ultimate point, kalosmin loka chaya krit, all of them, he says, will be destroyed. All of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller in the form of time. Everything will be destroyed in this world by time. Everything. The good, the bad, everything. Detachment. We can't take it with us up the mountain to Goloka Vrindavan. Now, on one side he said, the conclusion of the Shastra was to remove this bodily conception of life and attachment to it. But we need attachment. We are souls. We are living forces. Kapila Muni explains this, that the attachment has to be transferred. In Kapila Muni's instructions, what does he say that the attachment has to be transferred to? Saintly persons. Why? Not sentiment. But why? Because the saintly persons will speak about Krishna. The sadhu will speak about Krishna and become attached, and by attachment to him one will become attached to Krishna. Now we'll move to that one. So the second one is attachment to Krishna. Text 24 through 26 of the chapter, of this chapter, explains the process of increasing attachment to Krishna. The first parts are that Sanat Kumar will explain are the foundational points based on the mode of goodness. They are not directly in of themselves attachment to Krishna, but without having these good qualities, one will not develop attachment to Krishna. A candidate for spiritual advancement must be non-violent, must follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas, must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is, that one is what Prabhupada was speaking about when he said, talked about installing that diamond throne within the heart, because on that diamond throne is Krishna. And keeping Krishna in the heart and keeping the holy names continuously within the mouth and in the mind, this keeps one pure. It keeps one out of the material world. This is the positive. One must follow the regulative principles without material desire. and were following the regulative principles should not blaspheme others. A very difficult task. I remember that one Kartik month, during Kartik, many, many, many years ago, because in Vrindavan, the devotees would take their Kartik vratas and vows. In the West, devotees don't do that as much. But in Vrindavan, everyone takes a Kartik vow. And some devotees vow not to eat sweets, and some devotees vow to chant extra rounds or walk around Vrindavan every day. And one devotee said to me, I'm going to do something very interesting this year. As my Kartik vow, I'm not going to criticize anyone. And I said, oh, that sounds like a really fun vow. I'm going to do that one too. I promise you, I lasted one day. One day, if that long. And what I learned from that is how many times a day I casually and carelessly and just I just say bad things about devotees. Not even just it just comes right out of the mouth. Criticism, nastiness. Which gives it an indication of what a conditioned soul's heart is like. So much dissatisfaction in one's own heart from Krishna not being there that it comes out one's mouth in that way. Expressing dissatisfaction about everyone else when it's really springing Atmavan Manyate Jagat, one's consciousness. If we remember that example of Duryodhana and Maharaj Yudhisthira, whichever way we tell the story, it comes to the same point. One really only sees through his mind. And in fact, one only sees one's mind when one looks at the world. That's all one is seeing. So one should not blaspheme others. A devotee should lead a very simple life and not be disturbed by the dualities of opposing elements. He should learn to tolerate them. So once one is fixed in these things, it becomes easier to do the next one. The devotee should gradually increase the culture of devotional service. So the second point of the equipment that we need is attachment to Krishna. And the third point is going to, and we'll speak about it a little more, the third thing we need is the process of increasing the attachment to Krishna that comes up very strongly in this verse. So one should gradually increase the culture of devotional service. How? By constant hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pastimes, Krishna's pastimes, are like ornamental decorations on the ears of the devotees. What does that mean? It sounds so sweet. The pastimes of the Lord are like ornamental decorations on the ears of the devotees. What does that mean? Yes, always listen. But think of, yes, that's the point. But think of, what is the ornament on the ear? What is the an earring. So there are so many kinds of earrings that people will wear on their ears. And what is the special quality, what is the relationship between an earring and an ear? They're inseparable. The earring or the ornament of the Lord's pastime. The earring is a beautiful gold earring that is decorated with valuable rubies and emeralds and sapphires. It is so beautiful. When attached to the ear, it is inseparable from the ear. So, these pastimes, this is the recommendation of Sanat Kumar, to make the pastimes like the ornamental decoration on the ear. And he says it This is the ornamental decoration on the ear of a devotee. Inseparable. By rendering devotional service and transcending the material qualities. Rendering devotional service. He's serving. And transcending the material qualities based on the material identification with the body and everything connected to it. Lava, puja, pratishtadi, yata, upasaka, gan. They are weeds. If one does these things, one can be fixed in transcendence in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One will be able to attain the heights of Goloka Vrindavan. We'll speak more about hearing in a moment. And the last verse in this section about increasing attachment to Krishna as equipment that we can't do it without attachment to Krishna. The desire has to be there. The example we sometimes give is like the fish out of water. Or sometimes there's a yogi story. In every religion, the same story is there. When they put the person under the water, the secret for becoming advanced devotionally, and then for a long time until the bubbles are coming up, and then they pull him up by the hair, and he goes, you have to want it that much. That's the idea. Attachment. Such attachment. Intense attachment. And that's what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu displays. And Kaviraj Goswami specifically wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita to show this display of Mahaprabhu's final leelas, where he was allowing his attachment to Krishna to just burn through. And he was acting as if a madman. Nothing would satisfy him. This is the mood of Vrindavan. As long as something on this side will satisfy us, we will not be able to attain the heights on this side. So therefore, first step is this detachment. Not the first step, but it must come. An attachment. Deep, deep, intense, laser-like attachment. Sweet laser-like attachment, love, bhakti, prema bhakti must develop. Tatra loyam api mulam ekalam janma koti sukritana labhyate. It is not cheap. Upon being fixed in this attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the grace of the spiritual master and by awakening knowledge and detachment, the living entity, situated within the heart of the body and covered by the five elements, these are coverings over us that we've accumulated for so many births, it burns up the fire of separation from Krishna. There is no separation unless there is attachment. The fire of this burns up his material surroundings, exactly as fire arising from wood burns the wood itself. We need the body to perform sadhana. But the purpose of the sadhana is to ignite such a blazing fire of love for Krishna within the heart that every attachment and identification with the body turns to ashes. This is the example. Very intense example. And in Prabhupada's purport, not only in these verses in this chapter, he speaks many, many times, Param Dvistvanavartate. This is the process. By the higher taste, one will lose the material attachments. Unless we get the higher taste, we'll cling to the things on this side. We won't be able to avoid it. Unless we're tasting pleasure on this side, we won't be able to avoid the material attachments and clinging to them. That's the second. First is what? Detachment. From what?
From body.
Second, attachment to Krishna. And the essence of that, or the process very much of developing that, of course, the transcendental knowledge, the performing devotional service, the blessings of spiritual master, but we're going to focus on one, which is very much the blessings of the spiritual master and Vaishnavas, and as we mentioned about in relationship to Kapila Muni's instructions, and Satchinanda Maharaj is fond of mentioning about in this poison tree of the material world, there are two fruits, Shastra and Sarusanga, association with devotees, because the Shastra becomes explained in the association of devotees in a real way. So, we will refer back to a little earlier when the Lord asked Prithu Maharaj what benediction he wanted. And for me it's interesting, when I first began chanting, somehow or another, even though we didn't know anything about anything, it was actually quite early in the movement's days, Rupanuga gave us some special. Rupanuga Prabhu, who made the attempt to train me in Krishna consciousness. He told us right in the beginning something that was very, very advanced. Actually, he said, one day, if you keep chanting, Krishna's going to come and appear before you, and say. And he would always, whenever he would say this, he would make this hand movement and say, I am like this. What do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. And he said, now don't ask him for anything. And even if he offers Vaikuntha, don't take it. What you should say is, I am not a merchant. I have not entered into a merchant's agreement with you to take something from you. All I want is to be able to serve you. That's what he told us. Because Krishna actually becomes captured by that mood where the intensity is service. Because the service is not service like business service that I serve to gain something, but it's service based on love. It's loving service. Bhajate mam ananyabhak. Bhajatam priti purvakam. It's love. The essence is love and the service is the expression of the love. But Prithu Maharaj, when asked what he wanted, because he had pleased the Lord, when asked what he wanted, he didn't say, when the Lord came to him and said, like this, I'm like this, he didn't say, he came out with a benediction that he wanted. And this benediction is like a seed that he's asking for. And this seed has grown into a wonderful, wonderful plant. And then it grew still further into a most fragrant flower. But first the seed that is wonderful in and of itself. This is what Prithu Maharaj asked for. This is first, there's a little prelude by his response. my dear Lord. So he said to him, he actually said, what do you want? You can have anything. If a beggar says to you, an impoverished person with no ability or power says you can have whatever thing you, anything you want, it doesn't mean anything. But when the all-powerful, all-knowing, supreme personality of Godhead says, whatever you want, I will give you, you really think deeply about what it is that you actually want. So he says, why should any learned person ask for benedictions meant for living entities bewildered by the modes of nature? Such benedictions are available automatically. Even in the lives of living entities suffering in hellish conditions. In other words, why should I ask for something that it's available through karma? Even in hell there is enjoyment. My dear Lord, you can certainly bestow merging into your existence. That's the fruit of dhyan. But I do not wish to have such a benediction. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. This is what he does want. I want the benediction of at least 1 million ears. For thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. He could have anything. What is he asking for? To hear the glories of the Lord spoken by the pure devotees. Why is he asking for this? Because in that, Krishna is actually there. That's the seed verse. Krishna's experience is there. Rupa Goswami takes that seed and grows it into a luxuriant plant. He says, I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ear, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. The holy name Krishna, dancing within the heart, makes one simultaneously fully satisfied and completely unsatisfied. Mahaprabhu love this verse that Rupa Goswami composed. It is in Vidugdha Madhava. When Mahaprabhu was in, when Rupa Goswami went to Puri, he had Srila Rupa Goswami read these verses before, from Vidugdha Madhava, before Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I believe, who were the great, 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 great scholarly poets. We can just glimpse to the top of this mountain as well from a great distance, instead of how many more rounds and mantras I have left, thinking, as I often may, when is it over? Rupa Goswami is praying that the holy name is dancing in the courtyard of his heart, and he's begging for millions of tongues to be able to speak
more and more of the holy names and millions of years to be able to taste that sweetness. I do not know how much nectar that name of Krishna contains.
And now, in his Anuragavali, the vine of loving feelings, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes this plant and produces an exquisite, fragrant flower. These are the words of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Please give me millions of bodies. So not only tongues and ears. Please give me millions of bodies and millions of mouths in each body. By your mercy, place millions of tongues in each mouth. O Lord, may your millions of transcendental qualities dance on those tongues. What is the use of a soul that does not have millions of bodies? What is the use of a body that does not have millions of mouths? What is the use of a mouth that does not have millions of tongues? What is the use of a tongue that does not chant your millions of names? O Lord, may I perpetually have hundreds of bodies, and may each body have thousands of mouths. May each mouth have millions of tongues, and may each tongue chant millions of your holy names. O Madhava, wherever anyone chants your names in pastimes at any time, there may I, with millions of ears, eternally drink your nectar. May I have millions of ears and millions upon millions of tongues. Then, O Lord, I will eternally and happily hear and chant your pastimes. May I have millions of ears, millions of eyes, millions of hearts, and millions of minds, and millions of tongues, hearing about, seeing, and embracing the ocean of your handsomeness. I will drink its sweetness. May I have millions of eyes, ears, noses, tongues, and chests, so that I may continually taste the nectar of your handsomeness, your sweet sounds, your sweet fragrance, and your embrace. May I have millions of feet to go to your side. May I have millions of hands to serve you. May I have millions of intelligences to teach that service. O Lord, please grant me these boons. This is a glimpse into the heart of a Vaishnava Acharya. Conceivable? Perhaps it is like looking on top of a mountain from below, and through the clouds of my own experience, I can just try to imagine. Yes, this is the proper use of imagining. Once in San Francisco in the 60s, one devotee, Jivananda, 1967, asked Prabhupada, after having been chanting for a few weeks, "What is it like," he asked Prabhupada, "on Krishna Loka?" So how to explain what it's like? So a teacher uses something called Chandra Shaka Nyaya, which means glimpsing at the moon through the branches of the trees. So you have to point through something that is known to that which is unknown. So Prabhupada said, because some of you don't even remember the 60s because you were born after that.
there was the time of the Vietnam War, and in the United States, everyone was worried about going into the army. And Prabhupada answered the question, what is it like in Krishna Loka, by saying, you won't be bothered by the draft board. And another time at 22nd Avenue, someone asked him about the bliss of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, it is like an ocean of LSD. What can you say to people? Glimpsing, all you can see is through your own mind, but through our own minds we can imagine, glimpse, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, whose heart is a pastime place of Vrindavan, of the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, he's just desiring millions and millions of ears and tongues and noses so he can just, and feet and intelligences so he could just engage fully in the service of the servants of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. The seed that Prithu Maharaj has spoken, and Prabhupada mentions in his purport to this verse, he mentions Rupa Goswami's verse. And then Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has taken it to even more. Okay, why don't we take 5 minutes to write. According to my watch, it's 10 minutes to 11. Take 5 minutes to write. And then at exactly 5 after 11, which means 10 minutes after the writing, I'll call you back with some music. And when you hear the music, please come. And then we shall hear something that Prabhupada says about hearing.